Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
The 5.8 magnitude earthquake that shook the Washington, D.C. area on August 23rd caused some damage to the Washington Monument, including facade cracks that required it to be temporarily closed to the public for inspection. Sent to evaluate the damage were engineers and architects from the firm of Wiss, Janney, and Elsner Associates, whose inspections required them to rappel down the sides of the 550-foot monument.
While this would have been an out-of-the-ordinary job for many companies, for Wiss, Janney, Elsner, it wasn't unique, since WJE is known throughout the world for its ability to handle challenging inspections and construction problem-solving.
Hands-on inspection of infrastructure is essential to assure safety and extend service lives. Sometimes those inspections are challenging, in fact, downright dangerous.
Since its founding in the 1950s, the Northbrook, Illinois headquartered company has investigated, tested, and repaired more than 75,000 projects of all types, many of which were just as difficult to access as the exterior of the Washington Monument. Here today to discuss some of these challenging inspections is Bruce Caskell, who is a principal of Wiss, Janney, and Elsner. Bruce, thanks a lot for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your company's history and how it became the world leader in the field of infrastructure inspections?
Yes. Wiss, Janney, Elsner is a 55-year company founded in 1956 as Janney and Associates and a one-man engineering consultancy. Since then, we've grown to a national interdisciplinary firm. We're called on to solve some of the world's most challenging construction-related problems. We've become a leader in the field of inspection because of two key things. First of all, we've always looked for new ways to solve our craft, to explore how buildings and structures work. And second of all, we've heeded the words of Jack Jenny when he said to ask the structure, by which he meant that WJE should learn how structures perform by hands-on assessment and investigation. So when we visit a structure, we want to learn how it's about its condition firsthand, and we want to use the tools of our craft to be able to diagnose its performance.
So you use a phrase that I think is really important, and I want to give you a chance to emphasize it, and that's hands-on. Today, people are looking at a variety of technology, automated technologies, to instrument structures so we can know what's going on in real time. But there's still a need for and a lot of room for what you call hands-on or very close-up inspection.
Yeah, we find, although we're very conversant with the latest technologies, we find that most of them, I dare say all of them, can't replace the observational skills of well-experienced engineers and architects and material scientists. And when we get to a structure and we're able to observe conditions firsthand and up close, what we can learn is greatly superior to what we would be able to do via some instrumentation technique. We use instrumentation considerably for supplementing our findings, and of course there are many things that instruments can do that we can't. They can stay on a property, on a structure when long after we have to leave. They can be diagnosing information in real time over a long-term time frame. But these are techniques that we use in addition to our own visual and close-up inspections.
What are some of the more difficult inspections that your firm has undertaken?
Well, by difficult, I guess there's probably two things that create difficulty for us. One is structures that are just difficult to access, and two, projects that are difficult because notwithstanding 500 professionals, engineers and architects in our firm, we may have to mobilize significant resources to do the inspections. So an example of the first, as you said in your introduction, the Washington Monument, presented difficulties be able to rappel down the side of that 500-plus foot tall structure. We do many projects of that kind. We do those on building structures as well on bridge structures using what we call difficult access techniques. And the other type of work that we do that often creates difficulty for us and is just mobilizing for significantly large jobs. A good example of that was a stem to stern inspection of the Big Dig in Boston, Massachusetts, that we did a couple years ago, where we were given 90 days to inspect the $14 billion complex to look for key elements of that complex that could have safety concerns that the Massachusetts DOT should attend to right away.
So is that related to the case where some of the ceiling tiles came down?
That's correct.
That was a driver of that, yeah. And so what do you do when you need to mobilize those forces? Do you need to go outside the company, or do you have the people inside to do the job?
Well, we're structural engineers, architects, and material scientists. By material scientists, we have chemists, petrographers. We're capable of doing all the laboratory investigation in-house for taking out cores of structures and analyzing those with petrographic techniques or chemical techniques. We also do the instrumentation of structures in-house. In that particular case, there were also some mechanical, electrical, and plumbing demands on the complex, and we retained an outside MEP firm to assist us.
And when you inspect some of these ones that you described as difficult to inspect structures, what are some of the risks involved in putting people in a position to inspect those kind of structures?
Well, that's a good question. There clearly are, as you can tell from the TV images of the inspection down the side of the monument and many of our other inspections that didn't get the same profile as the monument did. There are risks inherent with that type of work. We long considered them. We've started doing this work as far back as the 1980s. We brought on board people who had unique skills in the rigging industry, which was necessary for understanding how to be able to rig the building and be able to put down the safety ropes that are necessary for us to be able to do the descents. And then our staff are trained, those who do difficult access techniques, again, as we call that in our company, they're very highly trained to do this in a full safe manner. We take safety very very importantly in our company, and we don't cut any corners in terms of ensuring that our staff is safe. There's trainings from outside agencies. There's a group called the Society of Professional Rope Access Technicians who we get training from for our key staff, and then about the 50-plus employees of ours who do DAT, difficult access techniques on buildings, get other more training from our SPRAT qualified technicians.
When you do something like the Washington Monument, is it necessary to start the ropes from a helicopter or something? Are you able to access from inside the building?
Yeah, well, those guys went up to the top of the building at the very first, right after the earthquake. The elevator system was out of commission, so they had a 500-plus foot climb up the stairs, they scouted out the structure from the inside. There is an access hatch up at the 500-plus foot level above the observation deck, which allowed one of our chief riggers to be able to get through the hatch to the outside, in which he came up with a unique crown that fit over the very cap of the monument and was able to suspend the ropes from that point.
So how did you get it to the crown?
He went out through the hatch, and the crown was just a short way away from that point.
But a long way from the bottom, I guess.
Yes, he's a unique rigger, and when he's not rigging, he likes to go rock climbing in the Rockies. So he does it both as a vocation and an avocation.
So this brings me to a quite relevant question, and that is, how do you select your employees? How do you find the people that are willing to do this? And it sounds to me some of these people are happy to get paid for doing something that they really want to do anyway.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. First of all, our employees love what we do, which is a healthy dose of work outside on actual buildings, going back to the statement I said about our motto being "Ask the Structure." We find that to do that, we need to spend a lot of time on structures. So we enjoy that immensely. And of course, not everything is difficult to access. We find many other ways that are less glamorous, but still very safe and secure for doing inspectional work. And in the case where it is difficult to access, we take volunteers, and as I said, about 50 of the 500 plus people in our company are interested in that work, and that's probably because they find that that uniquely challenging. I've tried it once, and I'm glad that they find it uniquely challenging, because I found it more challenging than I cared to do twice.
Is it a matter of you going outside and looking for those people, or are you finding those people come to you, or you can train your own?
Yeah, we definitely, first and foremost, hire the best and brightest of the structural engineers and architects we can find who are interested in the type of craft that we perform. And then once on board, once they see the gamut of what we do, if they're interested in being part of the difficult access team, they're welcome to get trained by them and to become a part of that team.
What motivates a lot of the inspections that you do? Is it often aging because of an accident, an earthquake, a storm?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say there's probably three reasons that we are, to use your word, motivated to do our inspections. And it's obviously a motivation that comes from our client, first and foremost. There are clients who come to us because they're mandated to do so. In other words, many structures, be it facades or bridges, have mandated inspections, and so therefore our client will call us and say we would like an inspection to comply with the law or ordinance governing this type of structure. Second reason would be a condition assessment. A client who would say, "I've got a building that's of such a vintage, and it hasn't been looked at, or I plan on doing some upkeep of it, and I'd like to get a thorough understanding of what its condition is." And the third reason is, as you pointed out, what I would call a forensic reason. Something happened, be it a storm, or some type of serviceability distress, oftentimes on building structures. It could be something as pedestrian as a water leak, inside the building that requires our client to get more information about what's going on the outside.
Particularly in the forensic cases, I would expect that a lot of these can be, if you will, calls in the night. That is, you need to respond quickly. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, very much. When there is something that the client calls and says, we've got a crisis on our hands, we consider their crisis to be our crisis, and we try and respond as quick as we can. Work out all the details later, but we believe our first task is to be out there to be able to help them.
So without asking you to reveal anything that's private to the workings of your firm, do you charge clients differently if the access is more difficult?
Well, the way we work internally is we have many project managers. Each project manager is given the responsibility for managing the project with the client and working out the billing relationships with the client. They, of course, if they are taking on a difficult project, have to work out all the details, and they usually the details would involve the time that would be involved with getting the team together, getting the team on the building, getting everything set up in a safe manner. And of course, to the extent that adds to the cost, that would be part of what the client would be paying for.
I would think that if you get a quick response call, that before you send people onto the structure, You've got to know a fair amount about that structure to keep your people safe and to know what to look for. I mean, is that correct? And if so, how do you learn quickly about the structure?
Yeah, absolutely. We probably, at the moment we get a new call from a client that on a building or a structure that we haven't heard of before, we're probably looking for web images of that property, trying to understand it as quickly as we can. Certainly the client will be feeding us whatever they can if we ask for any documents, and they, of course, recognize the timeliness of complying with that. They'd be sending us those documents electronically. We'd have those available to us soon, and we'd be able to game plan pretty quickly to get a response.
We've been talking so far mostly about buildings. Does Wistani get involved in inspecting public infrastructure like bridges, for example?
Absolutely. We have a very strong inspectional team that does work on bridges all around the country, a lot of work for the Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation, and obviously local as well in the city of Chicago. We do a lot of the inspections of the bridges, especially fracture-critical bridges.
So that's a term you need to explain to our listeners. What is a fracture-critical bridge?
Sure. A fracture-critical bridge is any bridge where there's an element of it that if it were to fail, would lead to a potential for catastrophic failure. So, for instance, a truss bridge would typically use two trusses to support a roadway. And failure of one truss could be catastrophic and cause the bridge to collapse. So those are the type of structures tension members clearly need to be looked at up close. So those are the type of structures where we are considered fracture critical that require a heightened level of inspection.
So the I-35W bridge that collapsed in Minneapolis was an example, I think.
Right, correct.
Do you find in general that new architectural designs are becoming more difficult to inspect, or is it more often the case that older structures are more difficult? Is there any correlation between how old a building is and how hard it is to inspect?
Yeah, good question. I would say the short answer is no. There's not a difference based on the age of the building. But each building is unique, each structure is unique, and each one presents its own unique challenges. New buildings could have complexity. One of the things that's important for exterior work on the building is a good flat top surface, one that you can stage from. Certainly if you're working from the type of window washing swing stages that are prevalent on buildings, those demand a flat staging surface at the top, and many new buildings might not have that, might have a sloped, a hipped roof, or even a curved roof, and those, of course, would make it much more complicated to do inspections from. But old buildings have challenges as well. A common challenge in an old building is an overhanging cornice that requires you to get around an extending cornice that might be 10, 12 feet deep. And then once you've gotten below that cornice, you have to get back up to a wall and be able to pull yourself back with some technique. So those are challenges as well for inspections.
Do you ever wish that architects, as they were designing things, thought about how they could design it so it would be easy to inspect? Or do you think they spend much time doing that?
I would say, unfortunately, when we're on the side of a building, we sometimes are wondering why this wasn't thought through to the level we think it could have been, or maybe from the nuts and bolts side should have been. We've dealt with many buildings where even just normal maintenance, replacing broken glass or maintaining sealant joints on buildings is daunting because there hasn't been a careful way to consider subsequent returning to the building and subsequent maintenance on the building. We're dealing right now with a very challenging challenge to do an inspection of deterioration that's going on the Gateway Arch in St. Louis. And the architect at the time it was built said this building would be maintenance-free for the life of the structure, and now that we're contemplating how to do maintenance on it, it's very challenging to figure that out.
So that was Saarinen's structure, I believe.
That's correct.
And
right.
I don't know that he's around to defend that point of view of that it lasted as long as he did.
Yes, right. No, clearly it's a landmark and it's a gorgeous structure, but it does represent a very unique challenge to be able to gain access and to be able to do inspections and repairs.
If I recall correctly, the what you see on the exterior, I think they're stainless panels. It's really integral to the structure. It's not a curtain wall kind of thing.
That's correct. Yes, those stainless steel panels are part of an integral structure of the arch.
So is that's a project that's on your agenda looking forward?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, we'll be interested in seeing how that turns out because that will be a challenge. In response to Tom's question, it occurs to me that some architects may present particular challenges to you. Frank Gehry's does a lot of curvilinear structures, Santiago Calatrava, or even Adrian Smith's Burj Khalifa, which is an awfully tall structure to be rappelling down.
Yeah, we haven't been asked to work on the Burj Khalifa yet, but if we were, I think that would represent its height and I'm sure that just the natural winds that would be occurring up at over 2,000 feet would be quite a challenge to work with.
Do you guys ever get involved at the design stage? Do you ever get a phone call saying, "Hey, we're designing something. Can you help us make it easy to maintain and inspect?"
Yeah, we do a fair amount of our work over the course of the last few years in new designs, not as the designer of record, but as a reviewer or peer reviewer of the design. And we will often challenge the architect to consider how you would gain access to the facade of the building, and those might be new questions that he hadn't contemplated before. We would often suggest davits, which are an integral part of safe access on a facade. Davits are a extended arm and base. The base is integral to the building structure, and the arm, the cantilevering arm, is typically inserted into the bases. And once those are set in place, they're designed for OSHA-required loads that would allow safe descent down the side of the facade. So we would often design those, test those for the clients if need be, and during peer reviews, make sure that that is being considered by the architect of record.
It's interesting to build it in at the start rather than to realize later that you have to look at the side of the structure and it's really difficult to get there. Do you ever come across structures where you literally can't travel down the side from the top but maybe have to use an aerial platform, a helicopter or something like that?
No, we might have taken some images from helicopters or had somebody fly over a structure to whether by helicopter or by plane to take aerial photography. But we're always trying to figure out a way to return to what I said in the beginning, to gain that hands-on ability to examine a facade. There have been, over the course of time, people who proposed things like mini helicopters that are remote control operated that would allow you to send this helicopter mounted with cameras up the side of a building and snap all the images that might be necessary for viewing that, but we keep on returning to the fact that we don't believe that those type of techniques can replace just a trained professional's eyes on the wall.
I don't think it's going to be easy to get away from tactile contact for something like that. So, are you in a position to say anything about the status and the future of the Washington Monument?
Well, we did take a look at it. We did find it to be structurally sound. There clearly was some distress that was caused by the earthquake, and we are currently working on coming up with techniques to correct that distress, some cracking that had occurred both external and internal. And I'm sure that the National Park Service will be interested in implementing repairs to preserve that building, that structure, that monument for the generations.
Very, very interesting. You know, we really appreciate your spending the time to talk to us about what I think is a critically important but largely invisible part of the infrastructure business. You're visible when we see you on the TV news swinging from the side of the building, but not at other times. But your function in keeping our infrastructure safe and secure is of high value to our society. So thank you very much. I appreciate your insights and your spending the time with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Good to talk with you.
As well.